Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Oh, look at this. Look at the season. Have you thought about it? We just underwent a major change of season. If you're thinking you live somewhere other than Alabama, you might think that that change of season was the beginning of spring. If you've been in Alabama and you've been paying attention, you'll recognize the change is that spring is over. It done. It gone. We are moving on. You're going to see it next week in a big way. We're going to be into our first big summer event. We'll call it American summer. It's important to understand this time. Man, your garden is going to be booming. It's going to be great. Things have been happening pretty good for you so far. It's not been a bad spring. We had a lot of rain. We had not rain every day for a while. It kind of gave us a little bit of dryness. So that's good. It kept the humidity from getting too high. The night temperatures have been very spring-like up until now. Now they're going to be very summer-like. Summer in the way that most Americans think about summer. Most Americans outside of Alabama and Mississippi and Northwest Florida, they think of summer as, oh, it's hot. And hot is 80 degrees. They don't have a clue, do they? And they're going to say, God, I can't wait for nighttime to get here because it's going to cool off. And that's the way summer is in most of the world, and that's the way it's going to be. That's the way it's going to be here for the next several weeks. You're going to think you're living in Pennsylvania in July. American summer coming up. And a really great time for us for growing a lot of plants. Your tomatoes are really going to take off as a result. Really take off. And they're going to be doing really good things now. So one of the things I want us to talk about, because a lot of you care about those tomatoes, and you put a lot of effort into them, and you think about them probably more than you should, without really thinking about them in the right way. But here's the time when I want you to think about them in the right way, because this is when stuff's going to happen. This is when that fruit's going to develop, and it's when things can begin going wrong. You can call me about all these things throughout the show, and we'll talk about them, anything going on. But let's talk about tomatoes for just a second, because this is the time to do it. You know, first off, I would have discouraged you. I hope I have discouraged you, some of you who listen enough, to not put a mulch on just yet on tomatoes. Now is the time to put a mulch on. It's a time to put a mulch on everything. This is when we put mulches out. Not so much during winter. You wanted that ground to warm up, but now it's really important to get a mulch out. Can I say this? Pay attention. Get the mulch out on your garden. Get the mulch out on whatever you got. You know, maybe if you've got eggplants and maybe if you've got okra sowed, maybe you can hold off a little bit on this. But most plants need a good organic mulch. Your tomatoes definitely do at this point. So you want to go ahead and mulch those now to keep the soil a little bit cooler, because soil's going to start getting hot really quick. That mulch does some other things. And one of the things it does is it keeps diseases from splashing up onto the lower leaves. And I think mulches help a whole lot with a lot of diseases. And that can range from things like Septoria leaf spot, which can still be a problem now, to bacterial funk. Oh, there's bacterial fleck and bacterial spot. And you think I know what all the names for those things are officially? I have no clue. But they're all kind of little bacterial diseases that can develop, and Septoria leaf spot and a lot of other things. And mulches help because it keeps that soil from splashing up around the plant. Also, it helps just to keep the soil in good fettle. I mean, it keeps the soil from compacting around your plants. A lot of advantages to mulch. No need to pull the mulch right up next to the plant. You want to leave a little bit of airspace right around the collar of the plant, just a little bit. But mulch is a real good thing now, and that's going to help you a lot on controlling diseases. We'll talk about some of those diseases like early blight, which you're going to get. You're not going to be able to do anything about. You know, you just kind of keep things growing. We'll talk about early blight as the season progresses. One of the interesting things, as I remind people, is that when they're looking up diseases on the internet, we get late blight early and early blight late. That's because we're on the world upside down. Early blight will develop a little bit later, but it's going to happen. We'll talk about it when the time's coming. But now, you got to think about something else. And that's insect pests. And they can be an issue. And so I want to talk to you about looking for insect pests. And here's why it's not such a big deal to do it. You're going to think, oh, I'm not going to do this. You're going to go out and you're going to look at those tomatoes every other day, and you're going to say, God, when is that thing going to ripen? But that's good. That's nice. That's sweet. But while you're out looking at the tomato, wondering when it's going to ripen, look at the tomato plant and look around on the tomato plant. It doesn't take, a minute or two per plant. And start looking for the problems that can affect your plant. And the worms can be a serious issue. And they'll be coming in very, very soon. Let's talk about three types of worms and what to do about them. Worms is our word for caterpillars. Caterpillars, you may know, are the baby, are the young, the larvae of moths. And these caterpillars there are three groups of caterpillars that are going to feed on your tomato plants. The first one, and a lot of you are probably seeing them now, are armyworms. You know, it could be beet armyworms, it could be southern armyworms. I think most of them are southern armyworms coming out of lawns, just accidentally getting on tomatoes, actually. They eat just about anything. Could be southern armyworms, could be beet armyworms. We're going to call them armyworms. And they're going to be on the lower parts of your plants almost inevitably. Beet armyworms, if we get an occurrence of them, may occur a little bit higher up. But often these things move in on the lower areas of your plant. And you'll start seeing the leaves a little chewed up. Sometimes, rarely, they will get into the tomatoes on the bottom part of your plant. And if you've got one of those big old tomatoes, that a tomato plant that's only going to produce five or six really big tomatoes, you are not going to want to lose one of those tomatoes. I don't advise you to put all your effort into one, into those big tomatoes. But if you've done it, you don't want to lose them. So here's the thing. Start looking for those little army worms on the lower parts of your plants. It's a really easy thing to control them fairly well. I would say you can use either spinosad or the thing we call Thuricide or Dipel, which is a disease that affects caterpillars, and that can definitely help to control those. You can also pick them off. Let me tell you something about worms, and I know this, and I've said it over and over and over again. If the worm is really big and conspicuous to see, there is no easier way to kill it than to stomp it with the bottom of your foot. No chemical is going to kill a big worm. Nothing except the bottom of your foot. Take a pair of pliers if you've got army worms and you want to kit the big ones, and then spray the BT for the smaller ones, the Dipel, the Thuricide. Hey, we're going to have tomato fruit worms pretty soon too. And we want to think about that. They're not going to appear at the bottom of the plant. They're going to appear at the top of the plant in the foliage. And the word fruit ought to tell you something. They go for the fruit right away. So they're going to lay their eggs right where those new flowers are forming. Not in the middle of the plant, not at the bottom of the plant, right where the new flowers are forming. You want to look for those. They're going to be high up on the plant, almost inevitably. And it's really easy to catch those early on. You can't use a preventative. There's no preventative that you can do. But if you're out there looking at your tomato plants, look for the eggs right around those flowers. You'll see them. It's really cool. You'll get really excited when you see them. Seems like I got more to say. But we're going to take a break, and we're going to be back, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about your tomatoes and a lot of other things that you need to be thinking about right now, coming up on American Summer.
I decline, I ain't gonna pick no peas. Because everything is on the phone, you know you got to go. I get down on your bending knee.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. Boy, it's heating up. It's heating up. Let me tell you, it's heating up not just in the yard, which it's doing. It's going to be hotter next week. It's going to be American summer. We're going that direction. Our first great summer. It's also heating up here with all of your questions. I got a lot of them. Todd, I want to get back to tomatoes. We're going to get back to tomatoes. Can everybody pause just a minute? And let's come back to these tomatoes because I want to get that consistently. I got a lot of photos, too. I'm going to try to get to those. You can send me photos at 251-343-0106. But Todd, now, Todd, are you still there? I know you got to get to church, but are you still there? Todd, make it. Oh, Todd left. Todd left. Sorry, Todd. I'm gonna get back to it with you if you maybe can pick up a little later. Rose, let's talk with you real quick. Tell me what's going on.
Good morning, Bill. I planted these two palm trees on my patio, and I'm worried that they're going to blow over in a hurricane. They were supposed to only get to 6 feet tall, and they're, I think, over 9 feet tall now. I sent a series of pictures, and I'd like to know your opinion.
Rose, I love it when I can give you good news, and I'm going to give you some good news. First off, I'd want to know, do you know what kind of palm that is? Could you, I haven't had a chance to look at the picture closely enough, but do you happen to know?
Not right offhand, no.
Well, it looks to me like whoever sold you that palm didn't know what they were talking about.
Yeah.
Because it's a big palm, and that's okay. That's the bad news is whoever sold you the palm didn't tell you the truth. It looks to me like you got sable palmetto, and sable palmetto is a big palm, no question. It gets really big. I love sable palmetto. It's one of I consider it one of our native Gulf Coast palms. There's some debate about whether it's native to Mobile and Baldwin counties, but there's some indication it might have been. But let me say that the cool thing about palms is that they can be planted very close to your house. And let me tell you why. They don't have root systems like conventional trees. They're more like if you've ever looked at it, have you ever pulled up a bulb like say a jonquil or a narcissus or a daffodil bulb and looked at the bulb and how it all works? It's just this little bulb at the base and then all these little fine little stringy roots coming out from the bulb, sort of like an onion. Onion's the same way. And that's pretty much the way palms are. So they don't have those big, thick, fat roots that get under things and lift them up. So they're actually really great next to houses. There's another great thing about palms, and that is that in Camille, in Katrina, when I have been into the worst places, the places where there was the most damage from the storm, where almost nothing survived, where live oaks didn't survive, where buildings didn't survive, where nothing survived, there were palms. Wow. And they were sable palmettos. And sable palmettos are among the most wind-firm things you can plant. So it's in a narrow place. It may eventually, the bulb may swell enough to crack a little bit the concrete that it's growing in, but it'll probably form around it mostly. But I don't see that they're a huge problem there, and they look kind of cool. And if you like the look of them, I'd say leave them.
Oh, I do.
Okay, good.
They're 52 inches, the widest diameter. You think that'll push through the wall on the patio?
Well, no, I don't think the trunk's going to be an issue at all. Another funny thing about let me talk about trunks on palms. The trunk on a palm doesn't get any bigger than it is now. Isn't that weird? Palms are not like trees. The trunk stays the same diameter, and it puts on new growth up above, but the diameter of the trunk doesn't get any bigger. The bulb may get bigger. And so the problem is going to be on that lower wall. It may push on that lower wall just a little bit. But the trunk, that bulb, is spongy. And it forms around things pretty well. So I think there's a good chance it won't even bother the lower wall. I think you're going to be okay.
Okay. And should I prune them, the
palm leaves, the fronds up above? Yeah, the palm doesn't care what you do. It's just as happy for you never to prune it. If you don't like those brown leaves, you can prune those brown leaves off. And eventually you're going to need a little pole saw to do it because it's going to get a little taller as time goes on. But you can just prune those lower leaves off. They also have things called boots, which are the remnants of the leaf bases that stick on the trunk. You notice that the lower part of the trunk, the boots are gone. On the upper part, they're still there. You know, it's an immaterial. If you like the look of the boots, and some people do, you can leave them. If you don't like the look of the boots, you can take them off. Doesn't matter to the palm, really, either way.
Well, what glorious news.
Yeah, well, I mean, life is good. If you got a palm, life is good. Yeah,
that's
true. Yeah, you got two. So it's easy. They're easy.
Well,
Rose, call me back if you see any more problems.
Thank you so much. Bye bye.
You're welcome. Bye. Yeah, so you know, if you get the right palm, it's really easy. I've had a lot of people ask me if, because palms can come up close to the house. And I know, particularly on the Gulf Coast, people who live in the warmer areas and in the older parts of town will often find their house. It comes up from a seed. I mean, they self-propagate here, particularly our pretty much native sable palmetto, sable palm, cabbage palm, some people call it. And they worry about that. You know, the only thing to worry about is does it bother the eaves? Does it rot the eaves of the house? You know, that can be a problem if the foliage gets in. And you can trim around that and avoid that. Rarely does it cause a problem to the foundation like trees do. So they're really nice. And I often say if you want a tree close to the house, the tree should not be a tree but a palm. Which we can call a tree if we like. They're tree-like. They are trees, I guess. But they're a particular kind of tree that's very different than most trees. They don't, you know, it's a funny thing about palms. Did you think about that? That the trunks sort of maintain the same diameter throughout their life. They don't get thicker like trees do. They put all their growth on at the tip. That's why when you damage the tip on a palm, you take out the tip, it's gone. There ain't nothing left because all that growth, all the new growth is at the tip. It's not in the trunk. It doesn't sprout from the trunk like trees sometimes do. It's all at the tip. Okay, we're gonna come back here, and I want to, because I think it's important, and I hope you're paying attention, because I think you're out looking at your tomatoes. Did we talk about you're out looking at your tomatoes? I know you are. You got tomatoes. You're out looking at them. You're thinking, when are these things going to ripen? Well, you want them to ripen as soon as possible. If you planted them at the right time back in March, early March, give them a little bit of protection. They are just ripe. They're ripe for ripening. And you should have a lot of fruits. If you're on the Gulf Coast, a little farther north, you may not be having as many fruits. But the time is right. And this is going to be the time when those tomatoes develop quickly, particularly in the southern part of the state. So what we need to do is look for the things that are going to keep you from enjoying those tomatoes at this point. And that's what I started talking about. So we talked about the army worms, and then I got to the tomato fruit worms. I want you to start looking for those. Listen to me. When you're looking at your young tomatoes, look at the flower clusters. Look where the flowers are developing at the tips, where you got your new tomatoes coming on. Look for those eggs. They're little white eggs. Just look for them. You'll see them. And when you see them, you're going to get so excited. And then start looking for the worms. If you see the worms and they're small, they're very easy to control. And you're out there enough looking at your tomatoes, you can do this. You can add this to your schedule. Now, we got one more worm we're going to talk about when we come back.
Brave men fall with the battle cry, and tears fill the eyes of their loved ones and their brothers.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
So, let's get on with this business. I took off last week, I confess. And so, I know, I think there's a build-up of questions. And I'm getting to them. I didn't take off. I had another obligation that I had to do, and it was good. I should tell you about it if we have time. It's a lot of fun. And it was out with some scientists doing some field work. And so this kind of little build-up, and I recognize, and I'm going to try to get to these questions as quick as we can. Somebody sent me a picture of a camellia that was looks like it could have been struck by lightning. Something happened during the storm, clearly, and I think that's reasonable. Isn't that weird that just that camellia did? So it split the trunk. Can it be tied together and saved? No. Do not tie that back together. Do not tie that back together. It's not a nice thing that it happened. I think the camellia will probably survive, but you definitely want to carefully use a very sharp pruning saw and saw off that piece that's leaning away from the trunk. Do not tie it up. It will not work. And it'll create other problems. It'll trap moisture, and then you'll lose it. The stem to the right, the stem that is not leaning, is probably going to be okay. It's got plenty of wood left on it. Just clean that wound up so that it doesn't trap moisture. That's the big thing. Do not try to tie it up. That's really good. Josh... Josh, your garlic looks better than mine does. And I can talk about why my garlic messed up. I'm beginning to understand what happened. It ain't my fault, and it's got to do with the fact that there were some diseases, and where I was growing it was a little wet and cool, and that's okay. But Josh sent me pictures of his garlic. They looked just beautiful. They didn't split up. A good testament to how much fun it is to grow garlic, because it can be done well in Mobile, and it can be done well on the Gulf Coast. It can be done really well throughout most of Alabama, and lots of varieties. You want to make your soil really nice. You want to make a good, well-drained soil. And you want to add a little bit of calcium and other things to the soil. It needs to be a good, well-drained soil. It doesn't have to be exceptionally fertile. It doesn't have to be exceptionally high in nitrogen, let me say that. But it needs to be a good, it needs to feel good. It needs to feel like it's got a lot of, that you can stick your hand in it to dig in it. And Josh's garlic turned out just beautiful. Good testament. Not everybody's things always work out perfectly. So Bill in Mobile, he sent me pictures of his Silver Queen. It's falling over, and I can't quite tell where Bill's Silver Queen is, because I've got some pictures here that are confusing the issue just a little bit. But you know, a couple of thoughts. A lot of corn needs hilling up as it starts to grow, and particularly if the soil is shallow because it's wet, and because it's been wet, and because the roots can't grow very deep. So, Bill, I'm wondering if the soil there is particularly shallow. Another thing that can hurt is a little bit of shade. Corn hates shade. It does not like shade at all. And so it's going to want to lean, and I think that may be going on there too. But tell me how wet that soil is staying. If it's staying moist, if it's staying really, really wet, you might dig down with your finger just a little bit, and I suspect that you're going to find that the soil is either very compacted or is a little bit wet about the depth of your second knuckle. And the roots aren't getting very deep, and so it's having a little bit of hard time standing up. And the second issue may be, I'm betting also, this may be compounding it, that you've got a little bit too much shade there. I would not grow corn if I did not have nearly full sun all the time. Nearly full sun all the time. A question from somebody who's a 20-year-old magnolia tree that has only bloomed twice. The leaves are green on both sides. That could mean a lot of things. I'm not sure what that means, but let me tell you something about magnolias. Magnolias, if they come from seed, if they're coming from seed, and I suspect this one did, if it just is a wild magnolia, they're just like people. They go through adolescence, and then they mature into adults. They don't start reproducing until they go through adolescence. And a flower is part of that reproductive process. This is birds and bees kind of stuff. Sorry, but we got to talk about it, right? So here's the thing. I think your tree is not mature enough to do a lot of flowering. If you've seen it flower twice, you've done well. Now, if it's I'm not sure what you mean by only bloomed twice. If it's only bloomed twice in the past, you'll have to help me a little bit. But it'll take a while for the tree to reach maturity. If the tree is not blooming and it has already reached maturity, and I can't be sure of this, then you got too much shade. That's all there is to it. It's almost inevitably the problem that there's just too much shade where the tree is growing. So you can look at both of those things. Would fertilizing help? No, absolutely not. Won't make any difference at all. I can guarantee that fertilizing will not increase flowering, particularly on magnolias. It's going to be about sunlight and maturity. Those two factors. Can't think of anything else that would have a difference. So you can send me a little more information, and maybe we can sort it out a little better. Sunlight, maturity, that affects the flowering. Somebody, Travis, got some rose clippings, and he says, any tips on getting them to root? Yes, get them out of the sun right away. Take them out of that sun. Put them immediately in some in a wet paper towel, put them in a shady place for just a while until we can get until you can get to them. Take the tips of those plants, not the whole cutting, but just the tips. And you can put them in really good soil next to a shrub that gets just a little bit of sunlight, not too much sunlight. You know, sometimes around big old southern Indian shrubs, there's kind of a nice little place where it'll get a lot of sunlight and it's a little bit protected by the shrub. Maybe on the east side of your house is a nice place to put them. And you can set those in the ground. That's one relatively easy way to do it. And a decent percentage of them will probably root just that away. But you've got to keep the foliage moist, and you only want to use about the top 6 inches of the cutting. Hope that helps. Call me and we can talk about it in a little more detail if you'd like. Question about what is a good pickling cucumber? I don't know. There's a lot of them out there. I'm trying this year. I haven't pickled before. I'll be honest. Can I tell you that? Can I be honest with you and to tell you that I haven't pickled cucumbers before? My parents did, and they had some great cucumbers. And I'm trying this year on several. There's a bunch of them out there. You know, I often start with some of the older fashioned varieties because they may be a little bit better, but they may also be more prone to disease. You never know. At this point, you're getting a little late, though, to plant cucumbers. Call me. We'll talk about it. It's just a little bit late. Sharon, I'm listening. I think we have a little bit of time. We do. Let's talk about what's going on. You there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can barely hear you. Let's give it a shot.
Okay, I used a product called Spectracide Weed Stop for St. Augustine and centipede moths with atrazine, and it did absolutely nothing. Didn't phase any of my weeds. I had wild geranium, Florida bethany, clover, berry vine, dollar weed, and other things that I don't even know the names of. And I want to know what could help me. Now, I can control the Florida bethany by pulling it, but the wild
geranium. Leanna, can you help Sharon with the sound just a little bit? Sharon, we're kind of having a hard time hearing you. I've heard most of what you said, but it's kind of a. Have you got your radio on by chance?
No,
Sharon.
No, and I'm not on a speaker either.
Sharon, by magic, you have reappeared, and your sound is really good now. I don't know what happened.
Okay.
We're great. So I heard what you said. Let's. This is a big question, and it involves a lot of things. I don't think that most people don't use herbicides correctly, and most herbicides aren't very good at doing what they're supposed to do. And the best herbicide, I always say this, and I'm not changing my opinion. It's not just an opinion. It's something that's been confirmed over and over and over again. The best herbicide in the world is a lawnmower, and using it properly. If you have things like Florida bethany and wild geranium, they're only a problem because you're not mowing your yard in winter. If you will, and honestly, I'll tell you the truth, having wild geranium in your yard is probably not a big deal. And having Florida bethany in your grass is really probably not a big deal. Because these plants come up and dominate at a time when the grass itself isn't growing. And so it's not hurting the grass at all. If for whatever reason you decide that you don't like nice flowering plants in your yard, mow them during winter. And now I hear the music, Sharon, and I'm going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit more about it. But give me just a second, and we'll be back after this break. Okay, Sharon?
Okay.
Blue tick hound dog getting sitting on the front porch cooling in the shed singing every song the radio played.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning. Sharon, I want to make you happy. I'm going to try to make you happy here with your lawn. You're laughing because you don't think I can make you happy with your lawn.
Well, I'm just wondering what height I should set the mower on in the winter when I mow, because, of course, I have it on 4 because of the St. Augustine. Should I put it down on 1 or 2?
Yeah. So first off, here's my rule. Never seek happiness in your lawn. That's how to be happy with your lawn. Because it will always be something that comes up, that always some little detail that is a problem. And you're never going to fix it all. So never look for pure happiness there, and learn to look the other way. You know, you got good friends and you love them all the time, and every now and then they do something and you say, oh my goodness, I can't believe they did that. But you know what you do? You look the other way and you say, you know, they're okay. Life's good. I'm happy. You do the same thing with your lawn. Now, let's go back to things. The winter weeds don't hurt. And they're kind of neat sometimes. They're okay. They're kind of cool. They actually probably improve the yard for summer when your summer grasses are coming on. They actually probably make the yard better. I know that's hard to believe, but they have roots that go deep, and they actually aren't interfering with the growth of the warm season grasses for the most part. And so, you know, you could ignore them, or you can just mow during winter. You can mow closer. Not doesn't hurt. You don't have to mow as often in winter. You really shouldn't mow that often in winter. No need to. But if you were to, things grow slower in winter and spring. So if you wanted to get rid of, say, rattlesnake weed, which is Florida betony, which is a cool plant, and don't get me started on how cool it is. But if you want to get rid of it, just mow it a couple of times during the winter, which is when it's doing its photosynthesizing. And it gets almost all of its photosynthesis done then. Doesn't do anything really after April or May. And you'll pretty much get rid of it. So a couple or three times mowing, you can mow it lower in winter. This time of year, yes, you want to raise the height. If you've got a mixture of centipede and St. Augustine, it makes it a little trickier, but not too much trickier. I would just mow everything at 4 inches. The St. Augustine will take over the centipede, which is probably the best thing in the world for you. And because centipede is a kind of a mangy little grass. It's always got problems. St. Augustine has problems too, but not as many as centipede. So let that, but set your mower at 4 inches. And this is the time of year. Thank you for helping me to remind people that this is the time of year we want to start raising the mower. So raise it from your, you can do maybe get by with one last low mowing right now, but you definitely want to start raising your mower by about a quarter to a half inch each week. Mm-hmm. Now into summer, so that you're at 4 inches high as summer heats up, which is May here. So by the end of May, you ought to be at about 4 inches high, and that will help to control the other weeds.
Well, thank you. It does make me happy to know that those weeds do not hurt my grass, because I thought they would choke it out.
Well, there it's like different seasons. It's like, you know, it's like
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to think ridiculous mm-hmm. metaphor that is sort of like, you know, people staying in a hotel room. It's like you don't sleep in the same bed with the same person who was there before you, even though you right. both sleep in the same bed. So it's just like,
it helps
it's not really hurting them. But if you, I kind of tolerate the winter weeds, and there's a lot of there's some birds and other things that kind of like to peck around. You may see more robins in your yard because you got some winter weeds in there, and you might see, because that's when robins come, and you might see other things, and it's not bad to have them, and they're not causing any real problems.
How about that wild strawberry? It looked like it took over a whole section of my, like a 2x2 section of my yard.
Well, it'll certainly do it, Duquesnia. Was that a shady part of your yard?
A little more shade than other parts, but not real shady, no.
Yeah. I can't tell you why that particularly happened there. That's obviously, it grows into summer a little bit more than the others.
Okay.
More than likely, the grass wasn't growing there, but I think raising your mower height will help. It could be that there is a little bit of soil compaction there or other things that may make it harder for the grass. But raising your mower height, if you've got St. Augustine, it will take over the Duquesnia pretty quick.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I can pull that out, too.
That's right. It's really easy to pull up.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Yeah, thank you. I wonder if, I hope that she's happier now than she was when she called me. You know, it's an interesting thing. It is an interesting thing. We often put too much emphasis on our lawns to the point that we will always be unhappy. And life's not perfect. Lawns are, in an imperfect life, lawns are the most imperfect of all things. We should accept that. There are people who don't, and they're miserable. That's all I can say. But for the most part, it's pretty easy to control things. Josh is weighing in on pickling cucumbers. And I guess I should come back and think about the pickling cucumber thing a little better, or speak about it a little better. We're getting a little late to plant cucumbers on the Gulf Coast. If you're farther north, if you're in central Alabama, maybe even around Citronelle, you could contemplate it. Central Monroe County, I think I would contemplate still planting cucumbers for pickling, but you want to get a little earlier start, particularly on the Gulf Coast. There are a lot of things that happen. If I were going to plant a pickling cucumber right now, I wouldn't worry about what's the best variety. I'd plant the one that's going to develop fruits in the shortest period of time. Because as summer comes on, and as midsummer comes on, as our Gulf summer comes on, the cucumbers are not going to be that happy. They love it now. That's why we want to get them started a little bit earlier. At least first of April. First of April is probably a really great time for cucumbers. Get them started, get them going. Maybe you could try it again in late summer, though the pest issues may be a little bit worse then, but you might try it again in late summer. Which varieties would I pick? There's a bunch of them out there. If I was going to plant them in early April, I would, there's that, as Josh says, there's the Boston pickling. I think there's one called Boston. There's another one called Chicago something or another. Those are really old-fashioned. Josh says he's got something called National Pickling. Josh is an expert on these pickling cucumbers. Hey, folks, we're going to be back. I know you've got lots of questions, and I'm going to get to them as soon as we come back. That tree, I'm going to identify that tree for you when I come back.
Mangoes and whipping black eyes, with the roses so red and the lilies so fair.
Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast, with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Oh, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast sunny morning with Plain Gardening. We got lots of things to talk about. We got lots of questions. I got a picture I'm going to celebrate here before the show is out. That's part of our contest. We're going to talk about that. But listen, feel free to send me questions. A lot of you have not been hesitant at all this morning to send me questions. I'm getting a lot of them. They're pretty nice. They're pretty fun. And it's been good. It's been good. And I'd say we probably made, let's keep a record, maybe 68% of the people who called this morning were happier when they were done than they were when they called. Maybe. Maybe as many as 75. Okay. So there's a chance if you call, or there's a chance if you ask me a question by text, which you can do, 251-343-0106, that you'll be happier after you did. Just a chance. You know, there's a chance you won't. I may have to give you some bad news, but mostly I can give you good news. Mostly, I think. Give it a try. See what happens. Good probability is going to work in your favor. Jim in Georgetown got me a picture of a great picture of Mr. Lincoln just blooming up a storm. Great time of year for roses. A great reminder that it's a great time of year for roses. It will also be a good time in fall. Fall's one of our great, you know, one of the reasons for growing roses on the Gulf Coast is that fall bloom. It's absolutely stunning, absolutely great. Thank you, Jim, for growing something besides, whatever they call that thing that I always forget the name of because it irritates me so much that it doesn't have any bloom, any odor. A rose should have odor, don't you think? What's the purpose of having a rose if it hadn't got a scent? Knockouts. Yeah, well, they don't knock you out. They just kind of sit there. Jim, thank you for growing something besides knockout. And it's beautiful looking. It really is. There's not a knockout in the world that will knock you out like Mr. Lincoln when it's in full bloom. It's just beautiful. So Jim sent me a picture of a pineapple and says, can I grow it outside in Georgetown? Jim, I wouldn't, no. I think that's the simplest answer is no. No. I've seen people do it with tents and putting covers over them in winter. And, you know, it probably works one winter if you're lucky. But the next winter, it's going to be such a pain you won't do it. However, they do real well in pots. And if you've got a space for them in pots for those big sprawling thorny octopus limbs, which I love because they are neat, and I've done it before myself. Grow them in pots, but I don't think they're going to survive outside. A similar question, would date palms grow in Hurley? Probably. Date palms, less of a cold problem for date palms, at least pure date palms. And there's a lot of things you end up with when you buy a date palm. You're never quite sure what you're precisely going to end up with. There's a lot of varieties. Some are more cold-hardy than others. There are really only a few varieties of date palm, and I won't remember them right off the top of my head, but that do well along the Gulf Coast because date palms don't like our humidity. There are a lot of old date palms in downtown Mobile to say something about how they've been around for a long time, but they all look sort of funky, because they don't like the humidity and they're not as good. So I'm not. I think date palms are one of our options in ideal conditions. I'm not particularly high on them because most varieties don't like our humidity and because you can't be sure what you're getting. So it won't be the cold around Hurley. It'll be the humidity that gives you pause. So just be cautious about that. I think there may be some better palms depending on what you want out of them and what you want to see. So I have been bad because I think this question has been circulating for a while. Maybe I haven't answered it. Well, let's see here. Maybe not. Maybe it's a fairly new one. Identifying a tree, and I'm getting the same question maybe from a lot of people. It's a Drake elm. It's an elm. It's one of the Chinese elms. I do not recommend these trees, and there's a lot of reasons why. Take a look at the picture. There's some deficiencies. They have deficiencies as lawn trees. One of the things is you will not be able to grow anything underneath them, including grass. So if you don't mind a bare spot in your lawn, you'll be fine. But you can see what's happening underneath that tree. And that's okay. That happens with a lot of trees. Just a word of warning. It has its foliage pretty low. The bark is okay. It is a weed. It produces so many seedlings, and everybody who grows them comments on this. It is becoming an invasive weed, and that's even more of a concern. That is, it's a problem off-site, but it will definitely be a problem in your yard. The roots are very shallow and competitive. Some trees just seem to exclude other plants, and Drake Elm is one. And increasingly, I'm hearing that people recommend, let's do not do these Chinese elms. They're not doing as well here as we would like. They tend to have wind problems. They tend to have breakage problems. So it's a Drake elm, pretty sure. I don't see the trunk, but I'm pretty sure that it's clearly a Chinese elm and probably a Drake elm. Don't recommend it. Don't recommend it. Now I get to say good things, nice things, wonderful things. Carol in Bay Minette is asking me, what edible hibiscus can I grow in Bay Minette? Oh, Carol, thank you. There's so many good, this is crazy, isn't it? It is absolutely crazy. Edible hibiscus. This sounds crazy. Well, it's not crazy because, one of the most famous of all hibiscus relatives is edible is okra. Okra is basically just one step over from being a hibiscus. It's very closely related. And we eat the fruits all the time, obviously. You can actually eat the leaves of a lot of okra. Have you ever heard of that? People eat leaves of okra. And there's some varieties of okra that I think have been bred just for the leaves. Wow. So a lot of hibiscus are quite edible. Not the really pretty things like the Cajun hibiscus, but there are a lot of others. Let me say Roselle. One of the most famous hibiscus. I love Roselle. It's very pretty. We can do it on the Gulf Coast. Can't do it in around Birmingham. Can't do it even in Montgomery. But on the Gulf Coast, we can do Roselle very well because Roselle, you eat the calyx. You eat the flower. You eat the little, there's a kind of a cushiony, densely textured part of the flower called the calyx. The typical hibiscus flower comes out, and when the petals drop, the calyx, the things that surrounds the petal, is quite edible, and we call it Roselle. You make great cranberry relish out of it. It's delicious. It's wonderful. It's a famous thing. Red Zinger tea. You ever heard of Red Zinger tea? Made out of Roselle calyces. Flowers. Let's just call them part of the flower. Quite delicious. Quite good. For summer teas, I make batches of that stuff. It's great. It's a wonderful thing. Another great edible hibiscus. Carol, did you ask me a great question or not? So here's the other one. You'll often see the plants called Mahogany Splendor, Hibiscus, and some others. It's Hibiscus acetosella. I am so sorry to have to say that, but it's hibiscus. You got that part. Acetosella, A-C-E-T-O-S-E-L-L-A. And I'm saying that just so we hit on the right thing. The leaves are delicious. They're wonderfully edible. I grow it every year. It's a beautiful ornamental plant. It will even flower on the Gulf Coast if you play it right. Boy, we could be talking about this for a while. Carol, I hope I'm helping. I gave you three. Mahogany Splendor. Look for Mahogany Splendor. It's a really good one. You can grow it from seeds. I think Baker Creek was selling that this year. Look around for it. It's a really good thing.
Cornbread and butter beans, and you cross the table. eating beans and making love as long as I am able. Growing corn and cotton too, and when the day is over, ride the mule and cut the fool and love again all over.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back, Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. I'm not going to piddle, folks. We're going to go right through this segue music and talking about what we need to talk about, because there's a lot of stuff we got to talk about. I want to get to this because Vanna, hold on just a second. And Rodney, because we got a lot of things we want to finish up on. I want to talk more about hibiscus, too. But I owe some people some answers here. Keith has asked me what I think about rubber mulches. Well, most of the time, Keith, I try not to think about rubber mulches. I'll tell you the truth. It is not the kind of thing I want to think about. When I do think about it, you will see a terrible grimace on my face. In fact, I can't control it right now. It's just happening. It's just this tightness behind my eyes, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness. Listen, rubber mulch is like mulch. It's everything that mulch is supposed to do, rubber mulch doesn't do. It's just that simple. And plus, it's going to be a total mess. My bet is, if you put it in, you're going to regret it, because it's not going to stop weeds well. It's not going to cool the soil. It's not going to help break down into good soil. It does none of the things we want a good mulch to do. And then you're going to have to figure out how to get rid of it. Ooh, I don't think you want rubber mulch. No rubber mulch. That's simple. That's good. So, Valerie, I think I can answer this one pretty quick. Valerie sent me a couple of pictures. I'm getting kind of dizzy looking at the pictures, Valerie, because they're all crooked in other ways. But it's an elephant ear that broke off. And she said, can this elephant ear be saved? Here's, Valerie, I'm going to make you very happy and very miserable all at the same time. I will tell you, there is no way to kill an elephant ear. No way. Absolutely zero ways to kill an elephant ear. If you figure out how to kill that elephant ear, tell me. And now, it can be dug up, but even people who try to get rid of them can't get rid of them. So you won't have any problems. The elephant ear is coming back. If it's a regular old elephant ear, it will. That elephant ear will haunt you for the rest of your life. There it is. I hope that makes you somewhere else. Don't worry about it. It doesn't need to do that. You're going to get a lot of babies around that plant. They're all going to get really big, really fast. Elephant ears are kind of getting to be a big problem on the Gulf Coast, and it's an issue, but. Summer tea, because that would be a difficult to process. Hibiscus flower for summer tea, because that would be difficult to process. No, it's really not difficult to process the hibiscus flowers that I was talking about. And I'm going to come back and talk about them, Carol. But we might as well say this. So Leanne, tell me about this hibiscus absinthe you were talking about.
Yes, my brother-in-law is a distiller in the Birmingham area for a distillery, and he uses hibiscus flowers for his absinthe, like the pink. It makes a red absinthe, and it's very delicious.
Yeah. So he's probably using that Roselle I was talking about. That is good, and it gives it a kind of a tart. Does it have that tart quality of the flowers?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, and you know the tartness is very pleasant. It is tart. It's like sorrel. But it's very good, very delicious. I love Roselle. It's a great one, and as I like hibiscus acetosella. There's lots of fun things you can do with hibiscus. We could spend a whole show talking about that, and maybe the next show I'll actually come back and talk a little bit more about this. I want to say to Carol, because she had another question about Cajun hibiscus. Do they need winter protection? Yes. That's the simple story. Yes, absolutely, they will. So we can, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about how to grow those. But I worry that Vanna has been on there a long time. Vanna, are you still there?
I asked you this question before, but I promise to write down your answer, so I will never ask you again. I have an old hibiscus that was here when we purchased this home, and it gives them nice, big, thick, fat blooms every year. But in the early part of the spring, like now, it's got a lot of yellow leaves on it. And I have three more hibiscus plants of a different variety in a more shady part of the yard, and they never have this problem. But this one older bush has it. So what should I do? I gave it a treatment of the Miracle-Gro Azalea Gardenia food about a week and a half ago. It doesn't seem to have done anything for it. So I'm wondering if cottonseed meal underneath, you know, or mushroom compost or something like that would help it.
Yeah, so first off, let's start off. Vanna, never think of fertilizer as a medicine. It isn't. And it doesn't cure anything, really. It's grease, and the plants need a sufficient amount of grease in order to do photosynthesis. But if there's something wrong with the plant, fertilizer won't help. I don't know that there's anything wrong with this plant, but I'm going to ask you a few questions. I think the reason why you never remember my answer is because I usually tell you don't worry about it, and then you quit worrying about it and forget the answer. How's that? But here's what. But I want to ask. Let's isolate this. Let's isolate this just a little better. Do the leaves the leaves fall off this time of year? But is the bush scraggly during summer, if I can use that technical term? Does it look bare of leaves during all the summer?
No, not really. And it blooms. It still gives the good blooms. But it even the little leaves, small leaves, are turning yellow, a lot of them. Well, not all of them, of course. There's still plenty of green there. But it bothers me to see this yellow.
Well, you know what I'm fixing to say. Don't worry about it.
Is it in distress, or, you know, have I caused?
No, I think as long as you've got plenty of leaves and it's doing well during summer, and it doesn't look scraggly during summer, and you're getting plenty of blooms, it's probably doing just fine. Now, why is this one yellowing and the others aren't? That is a challenge. You should challenge me with that question. Go ahead. Ask me that question.
Okay. Why aren't the other ones doing this?
I don't know.
It's a different variety, and it's older.
It's a different variety.
It's been pruned, you know, and it's a nice shape and size.
So I think it's just a different variety. Some varieties may. So I've noticed that a lot of gardenias, as they begin putting on their new leaves, will lose a lot of the old leaves at once. And it, as a result, the leaves yellow. And they kind of yellow at just the wrong time, because you got the blooms on there and you're thinking it's so pretty, but then you got the yellow leaves. Magnolias do the same thing in Alabama. A lot of magnolias are that way, particularly in the coastal area. They'll, you know, just as the flowers are coming on, it starts dropping the old leaves and putting on new leaves, and it just looks horrible in the process. And I think that's what's happening with this variety. That's my best explanation if the plant looks extra healthy the rest of the year. And I'm not really sure I know how to fix that. I'm not sure I could, since it's a natural leaf drop. Now, the only other thing that I've seen with gardenias is that extra wet soil. If the soil there is wetter or denser this time of year, it may be more inclined.
The house and the other ones are fine. Well, you know, it's mostly green leaves. now, and I see buds coming. It's got buds, 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 buds. It's getting ready, you know, another maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks. It'll be popping blooms, and I guess I should just forget about it.
Well, don't forget about it, because then you'll call me again next year.
No, I won't.
So you got to remember.
Okay.
You got to remember that it's okay to have yellow leaves on the gardenia.
That'll be that.
Gardenias have this yellowing leaf issue, and sometimes if it doesn't recover, then I worry about it. If it recovers and puts on a full slate of leaves in summer, then it's just part of that normal leaf drop in the gardenia. It doesn't come at the best of all possible times, but it's okay.
Okay.
Vanna, always good to hear from you.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Bye. Hey, we're going to be back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Listening to the show. We do it on purpose, just to make sure that you really love us, that you'll keep listening even when we play that. We do it just to make sure. Jesse sent me a picture. It's, can I ID that picture? It's a pawpaw. You know what a pawpaw is? You ever heard the picking up pawpaws, putting them in your pocket? Surely we have not forgotten that song. Where the whole thing. One of these days I'm going to sing the whole thing on the show. Pawpaws, they're part of our culture. They're part of our place in the world. We have lots of different kinds of pawpaws. That is a pawpaw called a hog banana. It is, I can't tell which variety it is. I think it's probably Triloba, which is the big one. Which the fruits can be quite good, and your dad called it a hog banana. That's fine. There's probably a little colony of that. Given the height of it, I'm going to say it's Triloba. It could be one of the other pawpaws, but it's a pawpaw. You'll come back in a while, and the fruits will be more well developed. And if you're lucky, a possum and a raccoon won't have gotten it, and you may be able to try the fruit. When it starts to turn a little bit yellow, pawpaw. Isn't that a cool thing? It's a real thing, pawpaws. It's too bad we forgot about them. They're really a cool thing. Rodney. I'm sorry. Are you still on, Rodney?
Yeah, I'm still here, Bill.
Thank you for holding on. So tell me what's going on.
Now, I've got a ficus about 9 feet tall in a pot. I'm sure it's root bound. I trim it back every year so we can bring it in. What can I do about, I want to keep it in the same size pot because I'm getting older and it's getting heavier.
Yeah, that's right. I appreciate that. So a couple of thoughts.
Heavier. Let's put it that way.
That's right. Ficus can tolerate close growing soil conditions better than others. That's one of the reasons why they're popular house plants. It certainly helps after a few years to replace the soil. And one of the ways, and here's what you basically do, and now's the time to do it. Pull it out of the pot. And, you know, pulling it out of the pot is probably going to be harder than it sounds. If you've ever, the roots will be plastered to the edges of the plot. I actually use a cake knife. If you've ever seen these big old cake icing knives, you kind of slip them down in there. And I bought one just to do this, just to clean the, but you'll need something. A machete might do it. Something to sort of break the roots away from the side of the pot. Pull it out of the pot. And this is going to scare you to death, but don't let it scare you. And don't do this in the middle of someplace that your wife is going to say, what are you doing? You got to do it over in the yard somewhere. And what you pull it out, and you're gonna knock the soil off the roots, particularly around those outer roots. Just shake it first, get as much soil away from it as you can, and then you're gonna take a knife, a good knife or a good sharp machete, and you're gonna slice down about I don't know how big the pot is, but let's say you're going to slice down and you're going to take about a third, not quite, a quarter of the way in. You're just going to slice down all the way around with that knife. And then you're going to slice off about one third of the bottom of the pot, of the roots. Just slice them off cleanly, slice them all off, shake the soil again. Have I scared you yet? Don't be scared.
No, that's exactly.
And then you're going to get, yeah. And then you're going to get fresh soil, and you're going to repot it in the fresh soil, and the same size pot, and it'll work great, and the plant will survive. It'll do well.
Can I prune it on top at the same time?
Yeah, ficus. If you thin. Here's what I would say. I would not do both at the same time.
Okay.
Let it recover. The leaves actually drive the root production. And so wait until it recovers and then prune the top just a little bit. And then call me back and let's talk about it. You have to send me a picture so I can help you prune it because it depends a lot. One last thing. Cloth bags make all this much easier. And if you will move to a cloth bag that you can put inside of another bag, that way they're much easier to move around. They're not as heavy. So it's one thing you might want to consider is going to cloth bags.
Okay, yeah, I'm not familiar with that, but I'll look it up and find out what it's
look, about. Look up cloth fabric grow bags, cloth grow bags. You'll see,
right.
and find one about the same size of what you're doing. They don't weigh anything, so you don't have the extra weight of the pot, and that makes it a lot easier to move stuff around. It's better from a lot of perspectives.
Oh, great. Well, Bill, I do appreciate that. Listen, I called you about the scaly-breasted Munia. The spice finches?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're still here. And it looks like...
That's amazing.
It looks like they're going to stay.
That's right. And so I can't remember whether I talked about it last time you called, but I did look them up. They are becoming a pest along the Gulf Coast in many cities and around Mobile and Pensacola. I think they may have been first targeted around Pensacola, but they're becoming a pest along the Gulf Coast. I hope they don't do too much damage.
Well, you
but,
know,
they're out there, no question. Yeah, well, it could be. Maybe they'll slip in without doing a lot of damage. Who knows?
Well, we hope.
But it's amazing.
Have a great day.
Yeah, yeah. Call me back when it's time to prune the top of that. Hey, Ronnie, let's don't waste any time. Tell me what's going on. Ronnie, I'm sorry. But, Ronnie, I'm going to guess at what your question was. You were asking about, is it too late to plant citrus? No, this is about the right time. This is a fine time to plant citrus. I can't, you know, early April, if I had to pick the absolute best time, it'd probably be early April. But late April's a fine time. May is a good time. May's a good time. You have to water a little more, but no, it's a great time for planting citrus. I don't recommend planting citrus after July for several reasons. This is just about citrus and a few other plants, but there you go. There you go. Now I got to come back because Jim and I could come in late to the party, but Jim's got pawpaws. You know, there are a lot of people who grow pawpaws just because, they grow them on purpose. Getting them to fruit is always a challenge. It's really neat that one is fruiting so well. And we don't understand a lot about fruiting in pawpaws. And I think there may be some pollinators out there that we're missing or we're not getting as much of. there has to be cross-pollination between two different varieties. That's probably an issue for a lot of people who put pawpaws in their garden. And a lot of times pawpaws are clonal. That is, they'll be one individual will have many stems over a big area. You know, you could have an area the size of your front yard could be covered in pawpaws, and they could all be the same individual. Does that freak you out? That's the way plants are. They're clones, and so they can't cross-pollinate because they're all the same. There ain't no crossing. So they need another clone, another colony to cross with. And now that we've kind of screwed up the world so much, we sometimes put too much separation between colonies because we've wiped out everything else and there's only one little colony left. So that's one of the issues with pollination on pawpaw. But pawpaws are super cool. Let me just say, pawpaws are super cool. There's another neat thing about pawpaws. If you ever wonder if you're looking at a pawpaw, there's a very simple trick. I mean, I could give you all the other ways of doing it. You take a leaf and you crush it in your hand and you put it up to your nose. And if it smells like somebody, some teenager just peeled off in your driveway in the car and left a bunch of rubber, that's a pawpaw. Does that help? They smell like burned rubber. Amazing smell. Now, some people may judge the scent another way, and you only really smell it when you put your nose up to the leaf, a crushed leaf, but it's a really distinctive smell. It's kind of so weird. It's kind of curious. I mean, you just kind of smell, did I really smell that? And you smell it again. You know, the thing about putting them in a shady spot and to get them to fruit, I don't think that's necessarily true, Jim, by the way. I don't think that's true at all. They do fruit better with more sun. Now, some of the northern varieties may be a little bit delicate, and they like to be on the edge of the woods, but they do need a good bit of sun to produce a good bit of fruit. It's interesting. We'll see. And you can tell me better, but my experience, the plants in more sun generally have more fruit. What have I missed here? Have I missed anybody here? I'm looking back through. I think I'm catching up. Michael sent me a picture of some orange stuff on a pear tree. Now, I'm going to look this up a little bit better, but it appears to me that the pear tree has a sooty mold on it. That's probably the result of an outbreak from some kind of insect that was on the tree. And the sooty mold itself is sporulating and producing little orange flowers. But I'm looking this up, Michael. I should have looked it up. I think that's what's going on. It's a curious sight. I think the orange is just the flower. And I'm working on the question about what this bug is on the potatoes. I'm reasonably certain that the bug on the potatoes is not harming the potatoes, but I'm going to look at it. It's one of the plant bugs. It might actually be a predatory plant bug. However, I'm not complaining. The picture's a little bit fuzzy. You got to acknowledge. So I'm having a little bit of hard time figuring out exactly what it is, but I think I'm going to do it. I'm going to try to do it as quickly as I can.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning. Plain Gardening. We got listeners all over. We got them in Florida. We got them in Mississippi. We got them up upstate in Alabama. It's all nice wherever you are. It's kind of a pretty good morning, isn't it? Nice morning. Sun's going to be out. Going to be nice. Going to have a warm week. That'll be good, too. I want to mention that Jarrett Anthony Helm is a man with a plan. I mean, he has been out, I am told, restoring the gardens around his family home that were destroyed by Hurricane Sally. He sent us some pictures in are just of the handiwork. Really great looking stuff. Jarrett, congratulations on your work. Jarrett's got a lot of business going on. He's also working with the Daphne Police Torch Run for the Special Olympics. He's got it covered. We give awards to people who turn them into us. And we do it every week. If you send us your pictures to Facebook, glad I remembered the name of that thing, Facebook. We have a Facebook page. We're FM Talk 106.5. You can just sort of search for it that way. You can go to the Facebook page. You can submit your photos there. And the pretty photos, the photos that catch people's eye, we vote on them every week. And if you catch people's eye and they vote you a winner, not only do you have the privilege of being recognized as a winner, you actually get a poster. And it's a pretty cool poster. And it's a poster on stiff board of a planting cycle, the planting cycle that we designed for Gulf Coast Gardening. Cool thing. Planting cycle works pretty well all the way up into, maybe almost up into central Alabama. And if you're wondering how well it applies to you, you can call me. We can talk about it specifically. But that's one way to get it, and it's a cool thing. We do it every week. Congratulations, Mr. Helm, on putting that together, that not only the photo, but the yard itself looks really good. Thank you, sir. Jared Anthony Helm, the winner this week. What else have we got? I'm moving ahead. Good goodness gracious, there were so many things. Dan is asking me, this is the coolest thing. In Washington Square every year, and Jared, they're not showing up yet. Dan, they're not showing up yet, are they? If they are, I want to know. But every year in Washington Square, there's a little parade. It is the coolest parade you've ever seen. Washington Square, downtown, midtown, the old suburbs of Mobile, the really old suburbs, the 19th century suburbs of Mobile, in midtown, right on the edge of downtown, there's a place called Washington Square. There's beautiful live oaks all through the square. And parading right through the square are a bunch of ibis. I-B-I-S. You know, those birds that you see that are so sacred in Egyptian iconography, cool birds. They have this cool curved bill. And you see those and you think, ooh, man, that is wild. And it is wild. It's weird. And it is spooky and beautiful and wonderful. And it's one of the really cool things about the Gulf Coast is watching those ibis, just a little parade of them. And I'm not talking about one ibis. I'm talking about a parade of them. And they just kind of walk through Washington Square like they own the place. It is the coolest thing if you've never seen it. Dan wants to know which kind. Dan, I think I've seen both glossy and white ibis there. It's easy to tell the difference because the white ibis are just pure white and the glossy ibis are dark. It could be white-faced ibis as well, and you can look for the white-faced ibis. I think the white-faced ibis are a little less common. I don't quite know how it all works, but they have that little white, there's a little white patch right around the bill. They're dark generally, but they have a little white patch right around the bill. But generally the glossy and the white ibis, I think I've seen both there, but it's so cool to see them walking through the square. What a really, really neat thing. What do you do with the Easter lily after it's finished blooming? I wish I knew which one it was. I think that some of them, some varieties will probably do pretty well in the garden in Mobile along the Gulf Coast. I can't guarantee that all varieties will do well because I don't know which one. There's a lot of things sold as Easter lilies. There are probably better plants for your garden. But it certainly wouldn't hurt to, you can try it and see what happens. Just put it in the yard. I don't think you're going to be happy trying to keep it alive in a pot. It's just a pain all year long. Doesn't do much. And then I'd go ahead and put it in the yard and see what happened. I'm not going to guarantee it's going to do great because I don't know which one it is. But it's probably going to do better. You'll probably have slightly better success. We have a lot of hawks, owls, and an eagle in Oakley this year. I heard the story about the eagle in Oakley. Isn't that neat? Might be scaring the ibis away. You know, probably not. I think they'll be in. I think they come in a little bit later, if I remember correctly. I think they're coming. They should be coming in summer. But if I'm wrong, we will let me know. But that, to my memory, I was thinking it was a little bit later to have the ibis coming in. They ain't scared of the hawks and owls, I'm pretty sure. Probably not scared of the eagle either. They'll probably all work together. Those ibis, man, they're pretty cool birds. They work it out pretty well with all the other birds out there. Don't seem to be scared of too much. Pictures of killdeer nesting in wide open areas. You know, I'm going to ask. I don't see as many killdeer as I used to see. That's interesting. I'm wondering if anybody else is thinking about that. This bug. Yeah, Rusty's got some pictures of ibis in May at Moss Point. Walking through, that's when he sees a lot of them. It's an interesting thing about ibis. Some of the ibis don't show up until later, and I want to think it's the glossy ibis, the dark colored ibis that show up a little bit later in summer. They're kind of one of the transitional birds, and I think they maybe show up in gull summer, but they breed and then they come out and are visible a little bit later. I got to remember how all that works. You know, birds, if we just remembered what the birds were doing, the birds along the Gulf Coast, not the birds in Detroit. You know, everybody's got some little saw about what the birds are doing in Detroit. Robins mean spring's coming, et cetera, et cetera. That's about Detroit. If we knew what birds were doing here along the Gulf Coast when the hummingbirds came, if we understood those patterns, when the ibis came, got off the nest, moved around, when the white pelicans came, we would understand the seasons here really well. The birds tell us a lot about those seasons. One of the really nice things. I'm going to look at this bug that we've got on the potato. I'm going to come back and I'm going to dress it next week. Don't let me forget to do that. It looks a lot like a squash bug, but I think it may be one of the predatory bugs that's actually beneficial. But I'm going to double check before we say exactly what we're looking at. Don't think it's hurting the potatoes, I'm pretty sure. Boy, what a show. I did a lot of talking, didn't I? Hope it helped. Hope you're happier. Give me a call next week. That's enough.